comes with generalizations. It would be hard to tell the story beyond the actual context of which the study was done. With quantitative research in terrorism, where we would have problems is we would have some serious problems getting into the actual story of what has happened. I'm going to be presenting some research findings from the START Center that are based on several databases that are quantitative databases. And what it basically does is it does give you a broad generalization, but it leaves a lot. It's going to also raise some ambiguity in which we will need some qualitative research like Michael's to actually understand some of the guts of what has been happening. And so what my understanding of what this panel does is shows you both extremes, and I would hope that it encourages you to have an appreciation for both and why we need both in order to more fully understand the context of terrorism. Okay, the man is done. So I'm with the START Center at the University of Maryland, and the START Center, for those who may not know, is the study of terrorism in response to terrorism, and it's funded by the Department of Homeland Security, and I believe we're in our sixth or seventh year. One of the things that we've been doing is we've been compiling data sets on terrorism. In fact, I can honestly say that the START Center probably is in existence because of this first data set that I have on this slide. It's the Global Terrorism Database, and it all started with 57 shoeboxes full of index cards that documented terrorism originally from 1970 to 1997. My colleague Gary LaFrie and I worked with a lot of students to compile those electronically. In fact, the original grant that compiled this data was funded by the National Institute of Justice. And it's a phenomenal data set because it collects both information on every terrorist attack worldwide, regardless of whether the attack was international or domestic in nature. Why this is a big deal is that all other attempts to collect data on terrorist attacks during this period only focused on international attacks, meaning that either the perpetrator, the victim, or the country had to be from some other nation. And to give you an example of why that's a big deal, The ratio, according to several studies, and we find in our own data, the ratio of international to domestic attacks is about 1 to 7. So for every one international attack, there's about 7 domestic attacks. So we were only seeing part of the picture. Since then, we've worked at the START Center to continue this collection, and we've actually just released data up until 2007. And at the end of this presentation, I'll show you how you can actually see this data for yourself, which is why the man was fiddling with wires around me. So this is the data that I know really, really well. However, I was asked to give presentations on quantitative research in this area, not just the GTD. So I'm going to talk a little bit about two other data sets and show you some findings that I didn't do myself, so I know a little less about them. One is, but the data sets are really great, particularly the second one. It's called Minorities at Risk Organizational Behavior. It's MARAB. And what it does is it gets at the question of which types of organizations are more likely to become radicalized. And which ones aren't. And so this is part of a larger effort called Minorities at Risk, which looks at ethnic minorities around the world, and it collects information about these different ethnic minorities. But this particular one uses open source data to collect information on organizations that are part of those groups. So they call groups the ethnic minorities, and then they call organizations the actual organizations they belong to. And these organizations may or may not be violent. In fact, only a small percentage of them are. This particular data collection has begun. It starts in 1980, and they've collected they finished collecting in the Middle East up to, I believe 2007, but I can't be entirely sure about that. And they're now starting to collect this information in South America and Europe. And they're also part of a larger grant where we're going to be integrating across all these data sets. They're going to be expanding beyond just ethnic groups and look at other types of groups as well. So it's a very exciting effort. The third source of data, and there's actually many sources of data, but these are the three that I'm going to present on today. I actually know the least about, and this is where we have sent researchers into several countries in the Mideast and asked them, interviewed people with a probability sample and asked them specific questions about their beliefs and their ideals, and I'm going to give you some of those findings and their ideas and their beliefs toward terrorism and toward violence, this type of violence, to get a sense of do these people really endorse this type of violence? And this I think is a pretty important slide, and it really could be a dissertation in and of itself, and I've limited to just to 8 bullets. But I, it usually says strengths and weaknesses, and I start with weaknesses so I can end on strengths. All of the data that I've described, except for the interviews, come from open source data, which means that the media needs to report a terrorist attack in order for the attack to be in the data set. And we've worked really hard to capture all of the attacks that are in the media. However, there's also weaknesses or limitations that we're able to find. In essence, what the GTD is, and also the Minorities at Risk, is it's an effort to collect 100% of everything that has happened, which is different from a lot of other quantitative methods or quantitative data sets. A lot of quantitative data sets, except for things like the UCR, actually collect a sample of what's happened, so that, and then because of the efforts that we make to randomize that sample, then we can generalize to the greater population. But we're actually trying to get a census of this, and because of that, we're reliant on the media, which means that we're also vulnerable to the biases that the media is vulnerable to, and so we take great effort to educate people on these biases, so that if you see that there's less terrorism, for instance, in North Korea, which our data says there is, it might be that the media might not be reporting much about what's going on in North Korea. You'll see, if I'm actually talking longer because I prepared for 15 minutes, now I have 20, but now I'm probably way too long. But if you look at the global terrorism database, there's a lot less terrorism in the 70s than in the 80s, which is probably true, but there's also a difference in how media sources during those same periods of time. Although the early data was all prospectively collected, these are things that we're trying to research into. Jumping down to the last bullet on the second column, this is really the best we have, and it gives us an overall idea of what's going on, keeping these potential biases in mind. So we do get an idea of what the overarching patterns of terrorism are, and this in and of itself is very exciting. We encourage anyone who's using the data to be very sensitive to these sorts of things, so that they don't go, screaming off the mountaintop some big findings that turn out to just be some sort of data bias that's inherent in the data. But regardless of that, I'm going to move on. So how I structured this presentation is I basically wanted to give an example of a research question that can be asked of each of these databases. Now, I actually have a really long presentation just on research that's been done on the GTD alone, which I didn't bring today. But this is the one that I picked, and I think it's a very important one. How well do our counter-terrorist efforts work at reducing terrorist violence? I think that's something that we all want to ask, and it's something that I especially am interested in. This is a project that we did on Republican terrorism in Northern Ireland, and this actually only goes from 1969 up to 1992. And you can see in the black line shows you the trend of terrorism during that period. And these, again, are only Republican attacks, so that's all organizations that are affiliated with the IRA. And the vertical lines show the attempts by the British government to thwart this terrorism. So there was False Curfew, which was early in the series, Operation Motorman, which was a surge in activity, criminalization, internment, and then a couple of attacks that have, or targeted assassinations, which are near the end. Now, what we did with this data is we actually used a type of modeling that we actually developed to look at this type of thing. It's a type of hazard modeling that basically tests for the effects of these six strategies on terrorist activity. And what we were able to do is we were able to control for all of the other policies, so all of the findings held constant, the other policies that were intact at the place at that time. We also looked at loyalist activity, so there's some competition in terrorism by British loyalists in the area. We looked at the number of fatalities in the current incident, and then also some more broader indicators, like economic indicators and the homicide rate to get a sense of what the violence was like at that particular time. Then we also controlled for Bloody Sunday, which was not an intervention, it was obviously very important. And I'm just going to give you some broad findings. What this slide presents are hazard ratios for each of the interventions. The baseline here is 1, and what 1 means is that there was no effect. So whether it means that the hazard is the same whether the intervention happened or not. If the bar is above 1, what that means is that the intervention actually was related to an increase in the hazard of continued terrorist attacks. If it's below 1, that means that it was related to a decrease. And what we find here, and these are actually just five interventions. The sixth had a little bit of a different effect. I'll show you in a minute. But you can see false curfew, and it was basically insignificant. So I just said it was 1 instead of showing the magnitude. So that false curfew didn't seem to have any effect whatsoever. But three of these five actually had a positive effect, which meant that there was more terrorism related to these attempts to actually reduce terrorism. The only one that seemed to have a negative effect, which is the desired effect, was Operation Motorman. I actually am not showing you the other one. The other one, it was more of a curvilinear relationship. But an effort to make this 15 minutes. What lesson is this? And this is actually some findings that have been found elsewhere. Basically, the lesson is that sometimes, and pardon my reading, but it's important that you get this, sometimes efforts to reduce terrorism can make things worse. More research is needed to understand the full range of countering strategies from repressive to conciliatory and to understand which types of organizations are more receptive to which strategy. And this actually also opens the way as to why it's important to have qualitative research to get in there and interview some people to find out exactly what the responses were. And there's actually a lot of evidence from Northern Ireland. In fact, one IRA member was saying that the British government is one of their best recruiters because of some of the activities that they conducted during this period. So, to piggyback on that, one of the efforts that I'm actually leading is we're starting to collect detailed information on counterterrorism in countries throughout the world. With a vision of having a global counterterrorism database, but to look at the full range of activities, not just the repressive types of activities, but the more conciliatory types, to see which strategies are best for which types of organizations in which setting. It's ambitious, but it really needs to be done. The next example research question is one that has been asked and directed toward the Marab data set, and what organizational characteristics are associated with a higher likelihood that the ethnic organization will engage in terrorist violence. And the next slide I'm showing you is one that I really like. This was actually compiled by Victor Assal and his colleague. And what it does is it looks at different organizations in the data, and it looks at alliances between organizations. So you may be familiar with this type of a graph. It's a social network graph. And from this type of analysis, what we were able to find is that there is a relationship between the number of alliances and the probability of having an anti-U.S. action. And what you can see, if you look toward the bottom, is that the higher the alliances, the greater possibility that there will be violence directed toward the U.S. Another set of findings that from this data set, and these are just general, and these are asking the questions, you know, which organizations are more likely to use terrorism and which ones are less likely to use terrorism. Well, at the first bullet, you can see that those that are less likely to use terrorism have a democratic ideology, and they only have a domestic presence. So those are that are just focused on democracy within their own country are less likely to become violent. However, those that are more likely to use terrorism, they experience periodic or constant state repression. They have foreign support. They have a separatist goal. They have a religious ideology, and they have no democratic ideology. So this gives you a sense of some of the things that we have found with this data, or those people have found. The last data set is the international survey, and this is what I was referring to earlier. And the overall question is, do citizens of the Middle Eastern countries feel that terrorist violence is justified? And the first set of findings that I'm going to present to you are basically ask, how justified are attacks on civilians that are carried out in order to achieve political goals? And these were asked of people in Morocco, Egypt, Pakistan, and Indonesia. And when we look at these findings, what we see is that pretty much most people in these countries do not think that this type of terrorism is justified. Morocco, it's a little bit different from the rest, but for the most part, you see an overarching pattern of a very, very small percentage think it's justified or strongly justified, and a little bit larger think it is just regular justified. Then the next question that was asked, not we because I didn't do it, is that is there support for attacks on U.S. troops based in the Persian Gulf? And what we find is that these results are very different. While most people do not feel that it's justified to attack civilians, there's some strong justification for attacking U.S. troops based in the Persian Gulf. This is especially true for Egypt and Morocco and somewhat Pakistan, a little less in Indonesia. Now, as promised, I have about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to show you, if you go to www.start.umd.edu/GTD, or just Google START or GTD, you'll get right to this web page. This is our new interface that was just released, fingers crossed. We literally just got it running last week, even though we pretended we had it running a month ago. And it's not supposed to say Marriott, but I will, but this is better than nothing. So let me do, I'll tell you to, I'll go start. Oh, they probably want us to log in. Okay.
Jolene, you know the code?
If I put the website in?
No, it's going to be something like an IGA.
Do you have the code?
What's that?
Is there a presentation that you want up here, or are you just trying to get the internet?
I'm trying to get to the website, yeah. I need to get to the internet.
Do you have a conference code?
All right. Well, I think this is going to take longer than my 1 minute that I have left. Okay, let's do it. Okay, so like I said, we'll do start GTD. And, we're not first. All right. So the website is www.start.umd.edu/GTD. Uh-oh. Let me see if I can if for some reason I don't know why they would. Okay, you cannot get there with start. Oh wait, here it is. All right. So you all have the website, and one of the things that this website shows you is when you get to it, you actually it's really gorgeous. And I was going to wow you with it all. I hope you were wowed enough with what I gave. But write down that web address, and I encourage you to peruse it. It's actually very user friendly, and again, you'll get an overarching sense of what terrorism looks like. Yes. We all have the same title. Oh, Dugan. Okay. www.start.umd.edu/GTD, Global Terrorism Database. Thank you.